support for that thing. When the predators are bad, they don't go. And so what I would just say is, while you're giving something away in terms of getting them a couple of games while looking to grow your fan base, if you're bad, man, Nashville's not going to go to those games. And again, the onus should be on getting a product that is good enough for Memphis that, yes, maybe for a couple of nights is over there in Nashville. Like, I understand the logic, but I guess I'm just not as gung-ho on it as you are about getting a return. I understand, again, them trying to grow the fan base. If you can get, you know, Cobb, if you've got a new lease that's 10 to 15 years or whatever else, and you get a group of, you know, a significant portion of fans because you've played there a couple of years in Nashville, a couple of games, to make the trip to Memphis because they've watched your team grow, right? And now all of a sudden they're so attached that they're willing to make a 200-mile drive down to a newly renovated FedEx Forum. Well, that's a long-term investment that's actually worked out in terms of, again, trying to grow that fan base. So I do think perhaps there is something you can pull out of Nashville in return, but I also think you're investing something here that could have a bigger payoff for you in a newly renovated building that hopefully you're going to be in for the next 10, 15, 20 years.
Jason, we really appreciate it.
I always thought of Memphis as the Grizzlies is like the Mid-South's team. And to me, like, that line ends at the Tennessee River. You mentioned a 200-mile drive.
We're the capital of the Delta.
Yeah, right. And so it's like, all right, you get Little Rock, you get Jackson, Mississippi. Nashville's got their own entertainment options. But hey, more power to them. If they can solicit thousands more fans in the Nashville metropolitan area, then you know, hey, maybe it's all worth it.
Yeah. We'll see. Well, again, just get the dang lease signed and let's all move on. That'd be nice.
At 100%. Like, let's get that done. Jason, we really appreciate the time, my man.
Y'all take care.
Jason Smith of the Jason and, or just beg your pardon, the Jay and Jay Show. Start your day with Jay and Jay. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, let's get into the NFL draft, including Cobb. What would it take? Let's ask this one question. What is the appropriate level of what day you should offer up as your suspension day if you got caught publicly cheating on your wife and with a reporter? What is the appropriate level of punishment? We'll discuss that and the draft when we come back right here on Jeff Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. Leaders Credit Union is federally insured by the NCUA. It's similar to the FDIC for banking institutions. It means it's a name that you can trust. It's also a not-for-profit financial institution fully owned by its members and operating for their benefit. They offer full-service banking, including checking and savings accounts, loans, mortgages, credit cards, and state-of-the-art technology to help you move forward. Leaders believes that everyone deserves a champion, and they want to champion your financial story by visiting leaderscu.com/ESPN. They have over 84,000 members strong, and they're one of the most stable credit unions in the nation. They've been awarded in the top 10% of healthiest credit unions nationwide by depositaccounts.com, and they're listed in the top 100 credit unions by S&P Global. They've also created that special webpage for our listeners, leaderscu.com/ESPN. You can learn how they can champion your financial story and even waive your membership fee. They have over 85,000 fee-free ATMs and 5,000 shared branches worldwide, as well as an outstanding mobile app that can allow you to do all your banking 24/7 right there on your smartphone. leaderscu.com/ESPN. All right, Cobb, I think this broke late last night. I feel like when I was like hanging on for dear life, trying to see if I could stay up for the Wild and the Stars game after both NBA games were pretty much laughers.
Is that for real? You wanted to stay up to watch?
I'm all in on the playoff hockey.
Okay. What was there a financial interest? In
no,
that?
no financial interest. It was that one though. I'd watched the whole game, and at that point, you're like, I kind of want to see how it ends. So
you know what? I've gotten into watching some like late night baseball. So one of the perks of having T-Mobile, I get free MLB TV. And we had Shohei versus the Giants last night, and I'm kind of in on seeing how the Tony V experiment goes in San Francisco. So I stayed up pretty late watching regular season baseball. So honestly, I can't throw any shade at you for staying up late to watch playoff hockey.
George and I have discussed this. I pretty much every single night on one of the TVs, I'm at least throwing the extra innings mix channel on and staying up through the end of the games. Like,
pretty good product.
Yeah. I've very much enjoyed watching baseball on TV. But the story that we got was New England Patriots coach Mike Vrabel won't be with the team for the third day of the NFL draft. Quote, as I said the other day, I promised my family, this organization, and this team that I was going to give them the best version of me that I possibly can. In order to do so, I have committed to seeking counseling starting this weekend. This is something that I have given a lot of thought to and is something I would advise a player to do if I were counseling them. I've always wanted to lead by example, and I believe that that is what I have to do to be the best husband, father, and coach that I can possibly be. This is not an easy thing for me to admit, but it is one that I know will make me a better person. I appreciate the support that everyone has given me and promise a stronger resolve as a result. So the first question is, if you get caught cheating on your wife with allegedly a reporter, is giving up day three of the draft enough? Here would be the spin zone for why it is. The Patriots do have 11 picks this draft, 8 of which happen on day 3. So that is the bulk of getting the work done. I also would like to know, how was this negotiated? Like, is this, like, is there a, remember in the good old days of the Committee on Infractions, the penalty matrix? Is it like getting caught at an exclusive resort in Arizona with interlocking fingers? That's a day 3. But like, if you have full-blown sex tape out there, like, you're just going to have to miss the whole draft.
So is that what this is? Is this a punishment?
So
as a result, like, because if it's just, if it, he legitimately just needs counseling or whatever, why not just wait until after the draft? So you're suggesting this is like an organizational mandate that, like, hey, we're going to make you miss day 3 of the draft as a result of your actions.
Here's why I believe it was a negotiation. Did you see what the New York Post released at 11:01 a.m. this morning?
Yep. There's more to it, huh? You tell me this has been going on for a while now, huh?
Diana Rossini and married Mike Vrabel caught kissing at New York City bar in bombshell new photos taken 6 years before the scandal. So,
womp, womp, womp.
I think to get their draft juices flowing, they called up the Post, which, by the way, before anyone goes, I'm just being absurd, Robert Kraft did try to intervene before the original photos were released. He did try to essentially negotiate. It didn't work, but the Patriots announced last night that Vrabel's missing day 3, and the New York Post apparently took that personally and then released the additional photos today. That did not feel like a coincidence to me.
No, it didn't. The timing on that is spectacular. I mean, these photos, man, like, okay, it's one thing to think you're in a secluded, like, luxury resort where there's not going to be any paparazzi. Like, that's one thing, right, in terms of trying to be careful or covering their tracks. But then there's just the mind-boggling stupidity of putting your infidelity out there for everyone to see in a New York City bar. Like, I mean, that's just as dumb as it gets. Yeah, in this cell phone era? I mean, come on. Like, Mike.
Also, did they start COVID? Like, was it, what, to your point, though, it's why armchair psychologist in me thinks part of the rush is probably put, like, the risk of getting caught, because it's so, to me, even the hotel was dumb. You and I can walk in there and act like we're a guest. Like, if you're really trying to just keep it on the DL, like, go get an Airbnb. You're both rich.
I mean, the whole thing is,
like,
poor. Like, it's dumb. I feel awful for their spouses. And the crazy thing, the new photos from the New York Post, like, you can so clearly see his wedding ring as he's, like grasping her arm at this bar.
Oh, there's the inner thigh pic, too. There's an argument that those pictures are more damning, which is why if you're also them, you got to wonder what else. Like, is this it?
Yeah, right. Are you telling me this is the only such relationship that...
Because today did not feel coincidental. Today felt targeted.
Yeah.
Also, I just keep going back to whoever was advising Diana when the thing first broke. That is one of the all-time worst PR strategies that I've ever seen. Because now, on the one hand, the only public comments that she's made are the photos are incredibly misleading. And then essentially you've got Vrabel admitting to the affair. Like, there's
no other way to interpret his
correct
comments.
Like, I'm going to rehab. It is just, God, South Park always just, they're just always ahead. Like, just like Once Upon a Time, South Park always said The Simpsons did it. When this story broke last night, I was just like, South Park already did it. The Tiger Woods, David Letterman episode of when they're all in the sex rehab. And now, why are you here? We cheated on our wives. No, you got caught cheating on your wife. You got to know, like, I guess maybe there's just like a sense of it also from both sides. I'm going to go on a limit. Doesn't have whiffs of first experience, although I guess today's photos prove that. And maybe when you've been getting away with it for so long, you just don't think, you know what I mean?
Well, but here's the good news for Mike Vrabel. If there's anybody who will have grace on him, it's going to be Robert Kraft.
True. I guess that's the question.
He also did just coach in the Super Bowl, too. Well, that helps a lot. And he's a legend in that franchise.
Because when everyone tried to hijack the conversation when the story originally broke, if you are going to be in the scoop business, you cannot get caught having an affair with a source. Like, you just cannot, from a journalistic... And this doesn't mean he's any less innocent, but it's not an ethical issue for him. It is a moral issue. It is a personal issue.
Well, I think it is ethical, but not on the same level as it is for Rossini.
Correct. Professionally ethical.
Well, I still think even that, like, obviously.
Well, I think you can make an argument like that is utilizing media to an advantage. Like,
you think he was getting enough intel back from her to
this is where I wonder though, can it get bad enough that the Patriots have to cut bait?
That's where I don't think so, because you're talking about a franchise legend as a player, a coach who's just coming off of a Super Bowl appearance, who's looks like on the field the right guy to lead that franchise into a new era, and working for an owner who, one, loves him, and two, has skeletons in his own closet. Like, there's never been a better situation for a head coach caught in this quagmire. Like, it may cost him his marriage. It may cost him respect. It may cost him the respect of his children. I'm sure it already has, right? But, like, as far as his job, I think
I would
his
like
job
to point
safe.
Out. The Petrinos are still married. And I believe, allegedly, biker chick and fiance, I think they actually wound up getting married too. Love trumps all.
Resilience. It is pretty amazing, isn't it? Sometimes you see things that you would think would break. I mean, Rory McIlroy is still married. Anyway.
Yeah. Because, as his statement clearly said, my lawyers consulted with me and my prenup's not that good. But love trumps all.
So this is horrible for journalism. I mean, horrible. Because everyone thinks this is what happens. And 98% of the time, it's not. This isn't. Like, you think, I mean, who's Trump's? You know, like, you know what I'm saying? So, like, no. But, like, in this situation, the stereotype was borne out. And it's there for all of us to see. And I just don't think that's good for the industry.
I think I'm going to push back. Here was the problem. Fairly or unfairly, Diana Rossini had this reputation.
There wasn't proof.
There was not, but there were accusations. And again, accusations from a, I believe it was in a divorce proceeding, and I believe the accusations had to be withdrawn. But there was at least smoke. There's not smoke around, like, let's use, like, no one believes that Nicole Auerbach is on a rocket ship to the moon because of this behavior. But Rossini, like, I don't think it's just as simple as scoop artist information break. Like, I guess it's, once upon a time we would call them news breakers, but I don't even necessarily know if it's like news anymore. It's more like factoid breaking.
Right.
I don't think it gets painted with a broad brush. I do think what, I think it's tough for us to, once we're on the scent, to put it down. And that's why I also think the other complicating aspect for a lot of media types that we're having to comment on the story is, I think we can in general agree to your point about Shams, the Schefters of the world. The scoop business is probably the most morally gray, or ethically gray, maybe. Because more times,
the things that you do, even that are not immoral, to get information in the sports news breaking industry would not pass the smell test of journalism 101 at State U.
But the evidence that I would use to support my claim, the suspicion was out there. When the story first broke, most, and that's the other thing, Diana is very popular amongst media, and particularly like very visible media. And almost to a person, the response was, well, this isn't a good look, but we got to see how this plays out. And it was a lot of neither here nor there. And I think what happens in that situation is, if you know that business, you know that business is sketchy to begin with. And also, yeah, probably, like, you don't want to come out and look like you eviscerated a friend. But if you notice, there wasn't like arm in arm, like vocal, like, how dare you, Diana would never.
Right.
And oftentimes that silence kind of tells you the answer. I also think, in terms of your larger point of not great for journalism, is this the journalism we care about? Because, like, in the end, it's all aggregated in 7 seconds.
Well, the fact that it's a very visible reporter covering the most popular sport in America built their reputation, now ostensibly through immoral or salacious means, at least on some level. It's going to make it, like, I'm not out here, like, I don't know, trying to be Mr. Johnny Journalist, but I think especially for women in sports who already have more obstacles in the media world, you know, like, this is, you know, you still get the old school mindset, like, especially covering professional sports where there's locker room access about, like, well, why is she here? Does she just want to see these guys in a towel, right? And all that kind of thing. You know, that still exists even in 26, and like this stuff, what, like, it doesn't help.
That's an interesting thought, because what I definitely think is true is women in sports, I don't necessarily disagree. It's harder for them to, like, I think it would be harder for me and you to reach the peak of, to reach the Rossini level of fame than it was for Diana Rossini. What I do think is unequivocally true is she is going to, someone in a position is going to be treated more skeptically or, what's really going on here? Whereas if you and I are breaking the news. But like,
right,
I do.
There's just different relationship dynamics between
correct.
Men and other men and women. That's just humanity. Like, I'm sorry. Like, I know.
I totally agree. But like, what I'm also saying is we are in an era where if you are a female reporter, you can get moved up much more quickly. I'm saying the honest way, like, because it's the the representation, but like the rocket ship gets put on them faster.
Yeah. You can, yeah, but it's also easier to.
Correct.
I don't know. It's harder to maybe get the public approval.
Yes,
or the,
I totally agree with you on that. Yeah. It's, but like, it's like a professional versus personal thing.
All right. Yeah. Like, let's say that you had been photographed having a beer with Andy Kennedy or something. Ain't nobody going to
probably out
think
there.
About that. You know, nobody going to think twice about that. Oh,
but
just a couple of bros hamming it up, you know, like nothing weird there. Like maybe, you know, you, like on a certain level, maybe your editor would be like, hey, like, is your relationship with the coach a little bit too buddy buddy? Like, are you sure he's not just like using you to, you know, whatever? But like, there would never be the same type of questions, you know?
True. I could also use the defense of, do you know how many people AK's got a picture of having a beer with? I'm not special. Now, the problem was, I think Rossini tried that, but I could at least get other pictures of other people. Like, that was always the tough of, like, when her first explanation was it was a girl's trip.
You ain't groping AK's thigh.
Correct.
Know?
Well, and it's also, it was a girl's trip, and then everyone's like, okay, then where's the pictures of the girls? Oops.
They were in the pool.
That was a tough one. I don't know. The other thing I was thinking about is maybe this is me being cynical, but like, I think she's going to have to take a timeout. I'm just not as convinced that her career is done.
Well, there's a landing spot now for the, just like the discarded journalists, you know, there's an outlet and a forum. People will be as interested as ever in what she's got to say whenever, well, she resurfaces.
Like, it's a different form, but like Mark Halperin was accused of way worse than what Diana is, because in the end, Diana's accusations are largely going to be an issue for her employer and then her husband and her family. But Mark Halperin was accused of aggressive behavior. Like, he's got his own thing going now in the online political forum. Like, wind up having to, like, work for yourself, but, like...
Yeah, right, exactly. Like, it's not... I don't think it's a career death sentence. Like, maybe it would have been 25 years ago when you had to work for a traditional outlet, and no traditional outlet's going to... You know, you're not going to get to ESPN or back to The Athletic or CBS or wherever in any short period of time coming out of something like this. But, I mean, she could start a Substack. She could go to Barstool. Like, you know.
I'm going to say Barstool's not an option based on how much Dave Portnoy's commented.
Right, but something adjacent.
Sure.
Like, there's non-traditional forms of media that can compensate you at a high level who will take somebody who has 500,000 Twitter followers and who everybody has now heard of. I mean, you think about it, like, even casual sports fans or non-sports fans who had no idea who Diana Rossini was before all this, a lot more of those types of folks have heard of her now. I'm not saying this is a good thing for her life, but I don't think it's necessarily a death sentence for her career.
Well, I mean, there is always the testament of, like, or like the question of, like, is there truly no such thing as bad publicity?
Yeah, right.
Like, she is certainly more famous now than she was a month ago.
Right. Her reputation has taken a hit, but her career could be salvaged.
Correct. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, let's talk a little bit of college football as well as taking a look at maybe a mock draft or two. We'll talk about it next right here on Jeff Wright & Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. All right, Cobb. Couple of college football stories from yesterday. I guess yesterday was contract finalization day because we had two announced deals yesterday. We had Kalen DeBoer in Alabama announcing a new 7-year contract that will pay him $12.5 million per season. The new agreement includes a buyout of $10 million through January 31st, 2027. The buyout decreases by $2 million each of the next two seasons. I believe Andy Staples clarified that that language changed the buyout if he were to leave for a new job. His buyout, if Alabama were to fire him, remained the same. I believe it was 90% of the remaining deal. So, of course, anytime you see something get announced like that, your first thought is like, well, who are they bidding against? Michigan was clearly kicking the tires.
Like, yeah, you heard Penn State bandied around.
Correct. This seems likely to me. This deal was agreed to during the playoff. It got announced yesterday.
That's the conclusion I reached with Gabe yesterday, is that it seems like, why now? Well, basically, Alabama agreed to, in principle or verbally,
correct,
a contract extension when Michigan and, to a lesser extent, maybe Penn State were sniffing around. And once it's put to rest, maybe you let the contract sit on your desk for a few weeks, you iron out some details, then it doesn't actually get announced until after spring ball, you know?
Also, like, would this have gotten, the details gotten, have, would they have gotten leaked if Alabama would have beaten Indiana? Like, the fact that they get smoked, you sit there and go,
do we want to announce this now?
Maybe we'll just sit on this, because it seems to be the case. So then the other
still feels unnecessary, though, doesn't it? Like, Kalen DeBoer, I mean, I guess the idea is he really would have gone, right? Like, and so, well, we had to do it. We had to do it if we wanted to keep him.
I still think he's a good coach.
But to be paid more than Nick Saban was ever paid, oh my. I mean, just the principle of that is off-putting.
No, I'm with you. I also think, though, how many other coaches now are paid more than Nick Saban? Because that brings me to the next point. Also, with an extension announced, was Jeff Brohm. 8 years, $64.8 million. And No Cap Sports had this out the other day. Louisville just published a white paper titled, quote, "College Athletics is Running Out of Time." They weren't being dramatic. Their athletic department ran a $12.5 million deficit last year. A reserve fund that once sat at $34 million is now down to $3.4 million. Yet they just agreed to pay $65 million to their football coach.
So, like, and they're spending like insane in the basketball portal.
And this
as much as anybody.
This is one of the struggles that I have, where I do think there probably needs to be more order than there is. But it really, it's difficult to take a lot of these claims seriously when nobody is operating like they're broke. Like, we've worked in media. We know what it's like to work for somebody that's, like, got money problems. You start selling off assets. You start consolidating. You have 58 jobs when you used to have one. Like, no one's acting like they're broke. I mean, that was the other thing that was interesting this earlier this week. Nebraska announces stadium expansion. Auburn announces stadium expansion. It's like, no one's behaving like they're broke.
Right. But the bill's going to come due eventually. So it's going to be private equity, right? It's going to be private equity.
Well, I'm glad you brought this up, because the other thing that I was thinking about is, Is there a way to make more money that is not either taking a private equity deal that is largely backed by your potential media rights, or just creating new television revenue? Because where I find myself being skeptical about the future is, if the only answer is we have to just keep creating new television revenue, I think we are going to greatly diminish the product. Case in point, did you see the story earlier this week about how NBC is going to, you know, for the last month or so, they have, in the 7-year Big Ten media rights deal, they got the championship game 1 year. And they thought they were going to be able to take it to market, perhaps sell it to a streamer, get the bids up, and sell it that way, creating quick cash. Well, then someone in their legal department said, hey, the only person you can sell it back to is Fox. So basically, they end up spending $70 million essentially to get the rights to that game, and they're going to sell it back for like $45 or $50 million in return, and then they're going to get a couple of extra regular season games throughout the years. So it's like, why am I entrusting the future of the product to these people? Like, I don't think they understand television to a large degree, but they do not understand, like, the sport.
Well, and we're tapped out. I mean, we've been exploring every possible additional stream of revenue in college sports for decades now, and it's, I mean, the market capacity is tapped. I mean, fans are going broke just trying to, never mind paying for season tickets and paying for parking and paying for concessions.
Yeah, God forbid your team goes on a run, you are just maxing out credit cards.
Right. Or you're starting a blog to see if you can get a media credential or something, you know? Like, and then you think about the cost now of watching on TV. All right. If I want to watch every regular season game, you know, I got to have the deluxe package so I can get.
God's watching. We have 3 NBA playoff games tonight. Do you know where you can watch them?
Well, it's probably Prime, Peacock, and ESPN, right? Or
all 3 are actually on Prime. One spot tonight.
Wow. There you go. I mean, but yeah, like if you're a fan of teams in different, like if you're a diehard follower of different leagues, different, you know, a college team, maybe you have 2 college, like you gotta have every streaming service under the sun now to watch every game. I mean, you're dropping $200 a month on TV subs, you know? So like where are these new sources of revenue that private equity is going to tap into? Like that's because everybody seems to think that they're out there. They're spending like they're out there. But I mean, I guess that's why PE firms are good at what they do, because they're gonna find them. But I'm afraid it's like kind of what you mentioned, Jeffrey. It's gonna be the expansion of the postseason, right? We see it in both college sports right now. Got to expand that NCAA tournament, even though there's no evidence that doing so will bring in more revenue. And I do think that expanding the college football playoff will bring in more revenue. I think that's the only reason why we're exploring that.
But then, like, I go back to the story from late last week, which was, okay, I thought the idea of moving the season up a week, of making week 0 essentially week 1, I thought that was all going to be in service of, let's get the playoff going earlier, like let's get everything moving, and then you realize, like, no, it's just so everyone could have an extra bye week.
Which brings in 0 money.
Right. I mean, I guess you could make the argument, you have now, for ESPN and Fox, you have now added an additional week where you could have extra big games.
So you could space out your games a little bit more.
Correct. And then you've added week 0. Okay, someone could start with a conference game. You know how the Big Ten used to, it's like, let's go live to Madison, Wisconsin to see Nebraska and Wisconsin playing week 1. Like, and then the SEC, you'll have, like, you're not going to put Bama, Georgia that week, or Texas, Texas A&M, obviously, that week. But, like, maybe you put Texas and South Carolina week one.
Yeah, but you still, you're working the margins.
Right.
You're working the margins here. You're not adding $20 million to every athletic department with this move.
But you did at least add an extra week that did not exist. But to your point, what actually generates revenue are the postseason games. I don't know. The private
equity. I mean, it makes you think the Big Ten's proposal is going to win out because, I mean, eventually Greg Sankey's going to have to cave to that reality of more games equals more revenue.
Well, I think you're right. But I guess the question would be, if not now, when? Because it seems to me like the Big Ten's kind of thrown a few more bones the SEC's way, like in the sense of, all right, if you agree to the 24, we'll do straight up do 24 at-larges. So I think you're right, but at the same time, it's like, I don't get the sense that they're budging, and ESPN's not budging. But I think that's self-serving. I think the reason why they don't want it is because they've made the decision if they go to 24, they're going to have to sell more. Like, Fox is going to get a bigger piece. Like, Fox doesn't have a piece of the playoff right now. Right now, ESPN controls what they sell to Turner, what they give to Turner, and they know inventory-wise they can't afford to do 24.
Yeah, so I think 24 is where it's headed. It just, there's too much momentum, and I realize the SEC's got to have to sign off on this, but how long can Greg Sankey dig in his heels and just kind of refute the inevitable? It's eventually he broke. The SEC broke, went to a 9-game conference schedule. Like, the SEC has kind of lost its stranglehold on the power dynamics here, and it's...
You know another thing I was thinking about? Because for the first time, to your point, it's 9-1 right now. 9 plus Notre Dame against 1 in the SEC. I wonder Notre Dame getting left out, because Notre Dame had kind of more or less been, I'm not saying in lockstep with the SEC, but they were good. I wonder if them getting left out and knowing that they are going to have the scheduling issues that they do, which is the best games that they can get are going to have to be front-loaded, and they're going to struggle to have the big-time late-season game that can kind of push them over. I wonder if the fact that they know, hey, man, in a 2014 playoff, we were fine. Like, does losing Notre Dame, is that what inevitably pushes the SEC over the top?
Well, it's still the SEC and the Big Ten that basically call the shots, and they're at odds. They're at odds right now. But it does feel that the SEC is losing some of its influence, and on a certain level, the popular opinion on this, I think, is moving in the direction of 24. I don't know if you took a straw poll of your casual fan. I don't think it would be as vociferously against it right now as it was a year ago, and it's nowhere near the anti-expansion crowd that we have in college basketball, where everyone's just like, why? Give us one good reason why. Nobody can come up with it, but you can come up with the reason why pretty easy in college football. More games equals more money, which is what everybody is in desperate need of.
That's an interesting question, because you're right. Like, there's not many issues, in particularly in today's climate, where the vote is what it is on expanding the tournament. I would like to see the raw poll of expanding to 24 in football. I think
it just feels like people have laid down and accepted the inevitable reality that this is where it's going, and there's nothing we can do about it.
And maybe Sankey's going to hold on as long as possible because he knows 24 means he has to get rid of the SEC championship game. And so until he has to do it, he's not going to.
And there's a pride element.
Sure.
We're the ones who pioneered conference championship games. We're the ones who basically like invented something that's been a huge part of the college football landscape for 30 years. And now we got to basically say that it's obsolete. And I think that's hard. I think there's like a,
well, and they completely control the revenue.
Yeah.
All right, my man. Cobb's going to join us for a little bit on tomorrow. So we'll talk to you then.
All right, brother. Sounds good.
David Cobb of CBS Sports. When we come back, we tell your story next. Right here on Jeffrey Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. All right, George, for today's Don't Tell These Story, Tell Your Story. Let's go back to NBA commish Adam Silver. In reports to new Portland owner Tom Dundon being cheap, quote, people are saying he's not really willing to spend the money. Remember, this is a guy who just won a bidding war. Call it $4.5 billion to buy the team, and they're calling him cheap. It just can't be. I think the Hurricanes. I'm not following the NHL every night, but he knows what he's doing. I think his mindset, and I'm just going getting to know him, but I think it has as much to do with the cost of the T-shirts or wherever he's saving. It's a mindset of how to run a business. It's a scrappy approach to, I think, focusing on the details, making people feel like everything matters. Just like, you know,
sounds like he
late
doesn't want
checkout fees.
I was going to say, sounds like he doesn't want to tick off his new owner.
Yeah, it sounds like he doesn't want to speak disparagingly about the guy that just paid $4.5 billion for a franchise, and technically he works for. Want to thank Cobb for being with us, as well as Jason Smith. If you missed anything, it'll be up on the podcast shortly after the program ends. For George, for Cobb, this is Jeffrey saying thanks for listening. Keep listening. The Gabe Kuhn Show is coming up next.